From Bradley University, this is Outside the Horseshoe. I'm Tanya Coombs.
The city of Peoria is creating a revised set of guidelines for developing new subdivisions and redeveloping parts of the city. It's called the Infrastructure Design Standards Manual of Practice Guidelines. It's the first comprehensive revision of the development standards in about 40 years. The policy proposal for the new subdivisions and redevelopment entails seven areas: the width and thickness of roads, lights, sidewalks, and trees, stormwater runoff, and testing and inspections during the development process. The City Council holds a policy session on the proposal next Tuesday night. Two at-large council members are joining us to talk about the proposed infrastructure design standards and the process that's unfolding to create and implement the new Manual of Practice Guidelines. At-large council members Beth Akison and Chuck Weaver are my guest to talk about the matter. Welcome.
Welcome to you.
Good to be here. Thank you, Tanya.
Thank you for joining us for this conversation. This is something that is growing largely out of the comprehensive plan that was approved in 2011. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I think that that's right. It's a reaction to the citizens' requests for an updating of how our city works, and we're going to need to redesign our streets and our sidewalks, and this is an effort that starts with the subdivision ordinance.
Right. And so the subdivision ordinance isn't something that the fastest growing area of the city, it's growth cell 1A, mm-hmm. Right?
Correct, 1A.
That area likely won't be caught up in any of these policy changes, because when that area was developed, it sort of grandfathers in the current design standards that rest out there.
That's correct.
The policy that the council is getting ready to talk about next week, and that there's been a lot of work by a lot of people on up to this point, really is about governing the next several decades of development in this community. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's start out with the idea of roads, because that seems to be the conversation when I'm talking with people that comes up most frequently. Currently, roads in subdivisions are fairly wide and maybe not the thickness that most everybody, including the people who purchase homes in those new subdivisions, might appreciate, because some of those pavements are failing now. And that may have to do with the thickness of the surface material that's there. Councilman Weaver, you probably have a pretty firm handle on what's required now, because in your life outside of council, you do development.
I've done development, sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So share with people what's required currently.
Right now, we're on a 3-inch asphalt. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a couple of things that may be a problem with that. One of them is
that's the surface that people
drive
on.
Area, mm-hmm. Yes, plus 8 inches of gravel. This recommendation would take that to 9 inches. There's a couple balancing acts that we've got to try to reach. First, we've got to do the things that Beth is probably one of our leaders in the community on, and just how do we make sure that we have desirable communities, and we want to draw people to the city of Peoria. There's two other things that go with that, though. One of them is we've got to make sure that current generations pay for current generations' benefits and don't pass those on to the future. And that's been, I think, the biggest push for this change is it's not fair for us to have expectations but push those costs into the future. And so we've got to make sure that the roads we're putting in do have a sufficient quality, that we're not putting, you know, kicking the can down the road with regard to who has to pay for the upkeep on those. I've talked to the engineer that we use and also a road developer, a gentleman that builds roads.
The engineer that you use when you're doing a development.
When we do development. And if you were, you know, working for the city and recommending the roads we need to have just good longevity, they come back at 4.5 inches on 8 inches. And also I called a gentleman that happens to build roads, and I said, would you like to come to our meeting? He said, I won't come because I'll upset the developers. And I didn't know how extreme his opinion would be. He said, you want a good road, it is 4.5 inches on 8 inches. So, I mean, I'm very comfortable that that is a standard that will work.
So now, that would be what, an additional inch and a half of
inch
asphalt?
Inch and a half, correct. Right. And I'm going to continue to push that. Right now, we're at 3 inches, but there's a couple of other problems with that. We have not been doing inspection of that 3 inches, and I know that in the document we have, and I'll point that out on Tuesday night, there is no way there is 3 inches of asphalt.
This proposal would take it to, what,
nine inches? Asking for. And that's an idea that came from Champaign, and I called over to Champaign to get those numbers. They've had two developments since they put those standards in place, and that was over 10 years ago, that have used asphalt. So basically, you take asphalt out of the mix, a potential road construction product. The good news that we have is we've got a lot of people working on this, and we've got time. I would hope what we do is we really dial in. In fact, I've got a note here of 5 recommendations that we can do to improve our streets, and here's what they are. Stricter pavement thickness, increased compaction testing, soil testing, inspection while it's being built to make sure it hits the standards, and then increased contractor warranty. I believe we can do 2 or 3 of those and have fantastic roads, and I believe engineers will stand behind that. But you don't need to have overkill by layering various things on top of each other, because I said there's 3 things we have to factor in. One of them is desirability. The other one's not kicking the can down the road. But the last one is you've got to be competitive right. with your costs.
So to that end, what additional cost might be involved in tripling, essentially, the surface of the road?
Let me break it down to 2 parts.
Okay.
Assuming no one will build a 9-inch asphalt road and they'll go to concrete.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Concrete is less expensive than asphalt?
Only when asphalt has to be that deep.
Okay.
So people right now tend to use asphalt. Mm-hmm. Without going to staying with asphalt, the increase on these recommendations are just about $4,600 per lot. And so that means that automatically you're adding, you know, if the developer eats that, and obviously they're going to try to pass it on. But I know that we'll walk away from a deal for $500 or $1,000. And when the home buyer doesn't want to pay that extra $5,000, well, you start losing business across the river, and that's a problem we have to be aware of.
And that's a concern in your mind.
It's definitely a concern. I mean, 5th District pays a huge part of the taxes for our city to pay for police and fire, and you can't just decide that that's not critical anymore.
Right, and that's where also the majority of the development is taking place.
Sure.
Okay, I don't mean to contradict Councilman Weaver, so maybe this is a misprint in our council communication. And I'm not necessarily in agreement that we need to increase the surface depth to 9 inches, so I want to make that clear. I don't really know exactly what the depth needs to be. We have a debate going on between city staff and then some of the people who are creating these subdivisions and using these materials. But the council communication says the difference in price would be about $2,200.
Sure.
What I'm saying is the recommendations of this proposal that has streetlights.
Oh, but we're not talking about that yet. We're just talking about the roadway.
I'm saying the overall additions are $5,000.
Okay. Right now we're just talking about the discussion about how thick the surface needs to be
of
and the
roads.
Actual construction of the roadway.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Councilwoman Akison, where do you stand on... Does it need to go from 3 inches to 9 inches, or do you think there's some happy medium in between?
Well, first of all, I think it's clear to people who live in subdivisions that are new, that have failing roadways, that there's something wrong.
Right.
Okay. Our city staff has made a recommendation that we should consider a requirement, if we're going to use asphalt, that the surface layer be 9 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Councilman Weaver and others in this discussion have questioned whether that's necessary, whether that's over-designing it, and perhaps that's true. So I think that hopefully when we talk about this from a policy standpoint, we give some direction to staff. Let's get some authority behind these numbers. I would like to know exactly, really, truly, if we're going to agree to a 4.5-inch thickness, then let's find out what the lifespan of that road will be.
Mm-hmm.
Because certainly we want to have subdivisions installed that have roadways that will last at least the life of a mortgage. And if that's, 15 years, 30 years, let's make a decision.
I would hope we're getting roads that last us 30 years.
Councilwoman
Akes and I totally agree on
right.
that.
Right. So let's kind of do it from the back end. Let's describe the kind of community we're trying to create and what those elements are, and then back into it, and then start having some discussion and compromise and negotiation about the costs. Because I think that we get off the mark and we stop discussion because we get afraid that the costs, perceived costs, are going to be a deal killer. And I think that it would be better to, you know, first of all, articulate how long we want these roads to last, and then get some authority behind the numbers as to what it's going to take to create those roads.
All right.
Yeah, we would agree on that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We got to just rely on folks that are going to understand it and give us good advice.
I do imagine that there are a number of people who live in subdivisions in the northern part of the city that are driving maybe home over roads that are failing, that are new roads that should not be failing at this point. So most everybody, I imagine, around the horseshoe will be able to get around the idea that something needs to change. It will be a matter of whether you go from the current 3 inches to 4.5 or jump that up to 9 or find some medium in between. So what of the other 6 topics this policy asks you guys to consider next Tuesday night do you think is sort of the next biggest issue? Would it be the narrowness of the streets, or would it be the addition of the sidewalks, the trees?
I'm supportive of the narrowness of the streets. I think my only caveat there is you don't make it a requirement, you make it a minimum. Mm-hmm. Because there may be developers that say, you know what, because the idea was let's narrow the streets and go deeper. Mm-hmm. So that we're saving costs and still accomplishing what we want. Mm-hmm. There may be developers that say we're going to want a wider street. And mm-hmm. So I think you leave that open to them. But otherwise, I think people are going to agree that we want to have that minimum reduced.
So currently, developers do not have to put trees in between the sidewalk and the curb. This policy would change that. How do you both feel about that?
Well, I am an advocate for street trees, and I think that, again, they're not just to pretty up the subdivisions, although the end result, you know, obviously subdivisions are lovely with trees. But from an environmental standpoint, trees offer tremendous benefits, and there are all sorts of ways of calculating the long-term financial benefit to a community if they have street trees as a policy. And, you know, they purify the air, they soak up storm water, they create shade, they reduce temperature. I mean, there is a laundry list of benefits that trees provide. And, you know, for the average person, it goes unnoticed, but they have to be placed specifically. It's not enough to randomly place trees in a subdivision, which is what's currently happening now. It's left open to the homeowner's discretion, so that trees get placed perhaps close to the kitchen window or maybe with just a random location with no purpose in mind. You know, trees to shade the sidewalks, that's what we're aiming for. And it creates a canopy on the street, which is very desirable. So I would hope that people could start imagining their streets lined with trees in a very purposeful way.
Okay. Councilman Weaver.
I like the idea of a minimum of 1 tree per lot, but I would do it a little bit differently. Right now we have this proposal has 10 feet between the curb and the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. The problem you have is the utilities are between the curb and the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. And I would recommend, so that means the tree's 5 foot from the sidewalk if you center it. I'd recommend we put that in the yard 5 feet from the sidewalk. So you're still getting the sidewalk shade. You're not getting the same canopy effect over the streets. But what we're doing is we're accomplishing 2 or 3 things. One of them, we'll have less curb damage as trunks work into the curbs.
Right.
Next thing, you're not over the utilities, which means you have a beautiful tree there that when they have to repair utilities, they take the tree out. And then there's a cost to the utility company of replacing that tree. And then also cost, of course, just the cost to the utility company getting in and working around those and roots getting into the utility system.
Oh, Councilman Akeson, do you have the willingness to move 10 feet?
Well, you know, I think that I'm not certain that those issues are serious enough to change the concept of having trees planted in the parkway. I'm not certain about how problematic it would be to the utility companies. And for communities that do plant trees in the parkway and establish a tree canopy and shade the sidewalk, I'm going to have to do a little bit more research on that to decide whether I think that that's reality.
Which I think you both can sign off on the idea that that's why this policy session is a really, really
very
good
important.
Thing because exactly. of the conversation.
I'll compliment Councilwoman Akinson because she will research it, and that's the beauty of having her involved. She does a great job of that.
As will you.
Yeah, thank you.
Right.
One other thing that comes into this is when those trees are in the yard, we don't have the cost of city maintenance on them. It's now the homeowner's job.
Let's talk a little bit about the stormwater idea and the permeability of surfaces and the things that are proposed to change in that area. Yeah. And Councilman Weaver, you
sure,
want to take that?
Happy to. I'm not quite sure why this is being pushed because right now we comply with all state and federal laws with regard to our water retention.
Mm-hmm.
And other communities around have not adopted the additional retention. I know of communities that have elsewhere. Let's say you did a subdivision of 40 lots. You would lose 7% of your lots, 2.8 lots. So you just lost 3 out of your 40 lots. 7% of your profits go away. I shouldn't say that. 7% of your revenue goes away.
Right.
Which means that maybe half of your profits, right? If you have a 15%, 14% profit margin on something, that 7% just cuts your profits in half. That makes it very difficult. Now, Morton has put in an increased retention area in one part of their city where they have a low area that has a water problem sitting. But it's not designed to improve what's happening on the Illinois River downstream at Beardstown. It's designed to deal with their specific community. And we're right now in compliance with all state laws with regard to what our retention requirements are per site.
So am I correct in saying this is something that you don't like, the idea of inserting a policy that governs all, but maybe on a case-by-case basis?
I would support if you have a subdivision, an area that's going to drop water into a low nearby subdivision,
mm-hmm.
that you have to deal with that, certainly.
Taking care of your neighbors in your community.
Yeah, but not across the board because it really isn't necessary. We tend to have more rolling property than that in our community.
Do you have a position on that, Councilwoman?
I think that, you know, ideally you want subdivisions where homeowners are not going to have to worry about flooded basements, and we as a city we're looked to mitigate those problems and, you know, write policy and have design guidelines that help the developers create the kind of communities that these people want to live in. So I think that we're aligned with that, and we don't want to have overkill. We want to be sure that we're proposing standards that will do the job at the right price that will last a long time. And I don't have a firm stance on this quite yet.
Sidewalks and street lighting, or where do you stand with where the
right.
policy proposal starts the conversation?
Right. Let me start with this one.
Beth. Sure.
I've got solid thoughts on this because I deal with this stuff a
sure.
lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope no one thinks that I don't understand my fiduciary duty to the city, and I want to have the right results, but the reality that I'm dealing with these things helps me understand that, you know, 1 + 1 can equal 2, and we don't have to do extra things if they're not going to really get us a benefit. So on sidewalks, what we want is we want continuity. We don't want a subdivision to go in and have gaps in mm-hmm. the sidewalk.
Well, right. The stop-and-go sort of sidewalks.
So
when
we're in the city of Mahomet. We do uh-huh. development over there, and they require a sidewalk to go in at the beginning of the subdivision. Okay. A few problems with that.
A constant sidewalk, not as a house is built,
no,
adding a sidewalk.
Constant a few problems with the idea. One of them is you've got to fund that up front as opposed to the builder paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a builder also, but that's typically where that cost would go in all these central Illinois communities. The second thing is that when you put in up front, you have to make the sidewalk 6 inches thick instead of 4 inches thick because you've got construction trucks driving over it. That would probably be, we could probably live with that, but the reality is the sidewalks still break. So now you're replacing sidewalks. So I've made a recommendation that what we would do is whenever there is an 800-foot stretch that's 80% built out, the developer is responsible to finish out those sidewalks so that you don't have these delays. And what will happen is developers, I think, will be smarter about putting their homes in tighter, quicker instead of spreading them out so that you get the sidewalks in place as the homes are built. And I think that's what we try to do is for how can we be a little bit smarter to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I've told Councilman Weaver this. I'm willing to compromise on this. Ideally, you'd like to see the sidewalks installed immediately, but I understand the downside of doing that. But more importantly, we want connectivity.
Correct.
We want these subdivisions to connect so that kids who live in one subdivision can easily get over to see another friend in another subdivision. And that is ideally what we want to see happen. So with respect to connectivity, I do not want to see us drop the ball on sidewalks. But as far as a practical standpoint, it may be that it will take some time for them to get built out. But they must be built out at some point. There cannot be an open-ended window for the people who are, you know, developing these subdivisions.
And that needs to be bonded so that if a developer goes under, the sidewalks still get built. I mean, that needs to be a requirement of this.
Is that currently part of the policy? I don't recall that.
Sidewalks, that is part of the policy. I'm wondering
being
if we
bonded.
Need, yes, and we need to make sure that remains the policy. I wonder if there is a way to deal with Councilwoman's concern about connectivity to neighboring. That's a great question, and we need to think about that one some. How we handle that.
All right, lighting. Lighting is an expense. It is not currently part of a developer's obligation, right? But we saw Lyndhurst Subdivision go back and do the special assessment recently, which was kind of an issue for the people who live there. How is it possible to address this in a way that's fair to all and still pleasing to the development of a community?
Mm-hmm. I'm encouraging required yard lights as opposed to street lights. That way the maintenance is back on the homeowner as opposed to the city. And this is probably the most expensive, even more than the streets. The street light project is more expensive than the pavement thickness. They're looking at $2,700 a lot for the cost of that. And with yard lights, you can do it much less expensively. Now, I do want to go look at Washington and Morton. I was told they have a street light requirement. It may be that they have a yard light requirement. And so I need to go check that.
Are yard lights big enough? Do they have enough of a
luminosity?
Yes.
They won't have as much as a street light.
No, and perhaps the compromise would be to have street lights at intersections and pedestrian scale lighting that is installed by the homeowners. Who bears the cost? If the homeowner bears the cost because the cost of the home when it's sold to them is higher, you know, I think that that's also kind of debatable. It's probably a psychological concern where after the fact then the homeowner realizes they have to put in a street light and they have to put in a yard tree. And again, this is another one of those policy issues. If we want to create neighborhoods that have some predictability to them so that they're not random and the outcome isn't spotty, we might want to give some more thought to giving specific guidance for the placement of all of this. And I think that during our conversations during the focus groups, it was discussed that there would be
a required
placement if it turns out that the homeowner is responsible for the installation of the yard light. But whether it creates the kind of pedestrian lighting that you're looking for, that's, again, debatable, and it would be a matter of what the quality of the light is.
The other portion of the policy that you'll be considering is about inspections and adding more inspections at the engineering of any development. And that is something that I'm sure you guys will spend some time vetting as well Tuesday night.
I think the developers are probably going to accept that as being logical.
Mm-hmm.
I know the city talked about picking up the cost of that inspection, increased inspection. We'll have to see how that works out. If there's give and take on some other things, inspections are logical.
My thanks to both Councilman Weaver and Councilwoman Akeson for taking the time to talk with us this evening about the infrastructure development policy that will be discussed by the Peoria City Council on Tuesday night in an open policy session. Thank you again for joining me for the show. You're listening to Outside the Horseshoe on 89.9 Peoria Public Radio. I'm Tanya Coombs.